Hello, everyone. This is Dark Journalist with a fascinating part two episode with Oxford scholar and Giza Death Star book series author, Dr. Joseph Farrell. Now, in part one, Dr. Farrell outlined why the push for UFO disclosure has become just a new method of government control.
This government has lied about the Kennedy assassination. It has lied about Watergate. It has lied about Ruby Ridge. It has lied about Waco. It has lied. And now all of a sudden, we're going to believe it with UFOs? Count me out.
Are we looking at a plan for global control from space that originated 75 years ago with the penetration of the U.S. space program by Nazi agents and aerospace defense contractors? Let's go ask Dr. Joseph Farrell.
They set up their getaway plan there, and the rat lines and all the rest of it. Argentina was a central piece of that. But one of the things that you've really discovered is that the technology went with them.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's crucial.
That's crucial. Yeah. Kurt Tank is there. The German aircraft designer is down in Argentina. The Horton brothers are there. Eric Rudell, one of the German Luftwaffe flying aces, is down there, and they're building these Delta wing jet aircraft for Juan Perón. I put a picture of one of them in one of my books. And, you know, this thing is, it looks like a French Mirage jet in 1947. You know, and we're still building our jet aircraft with straight wings and maybe a little switchback wing, but not a Delta wing.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I mean, again, ahead of the curve.
Amazing. And you've pointed that out in relation to Nazi Germany, is that from everything from cellular phones to television, they had so much of this technology. The photography was advanced. Mm-hmm. And in many ways, we're kind of living in the German technology wave world because they had invented all this stuff.
Yeah, well, silicon chips, semiconductor chips, little vacuum tubes about as big as the end of your little fingertip, and the Allied equivalent at the end of the war is 10 times larger.
Wow.
You know, just immense achievement in miniaturization. Television cameras in a shoebox, you know, for that era is something. Just an unbelievable amount of stuff that I think became part of the greatest technology transfer in history from there to here.
Yeah.
Just incredible stuff.
Well, it's amazing because the 1936 Olympics, if you're in Germany, you can see it on television.
You could watch it on television, right. And guess who made that possible for them?
Who?
Philo Farnsworth. The Germans bought license arrangements of his patents and brought him over.
Amazing.
To Germany to help them build that television network for the Berlin Olympics. So yeah, you could watch the whole thing on these little television stations around Berlin.
Why was
tune in and see Dolph on television?
You
know?
You got Hitler waving in the stand. And, you know, a young Richard Helms goes up there to interview him, and he's one of the few guys who ever gets access to him. He's a journalist. How about that?
Yeah, Richard Helms. How about that? John J. McCloy in Hitler's box at the Olympics. Gee, lawyer for R.G. Farben, and then after the war, High Commissioner for Germany, and then a member of the Warren Commission.
Wow.
That guy gets around.
chairman for Chase Manhattan. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Mm-hmm. McCloy, as you pointed out, was one of the signatories on CERN.
Yes.
That is really, I mean, mm-hmm. we're talking about they're building a whole strata and the public has nothing. They're completely out of it. I mean,
they're completely out of it. Yeah.
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 When we look at this, If we take it from that, let's actually go from the 1936 Olympics to now.
Okay.
Let's imagine that there, those technologists with that fascist leaning said, mm-hmm. we control this whole shebang from space,
mm-hmm.
and we can control the citizenry with a global control grid,
mm-hmm.
and that so much of what they put in place from the V2 rockets into the NASA program, into getting the German scientists over here, into stopping the moon landings from 1972 until 2024. Where are they now? They're pretty close to completing their plan.
Well, like I put it earlier, they may think they're close, and I think they're in a hurry. For several reasons, but another reason I need to mention is that they're in a hurry because people are waking up,
right?
And they're waking up to the fact that what they want to put into place is not only inhuman, it's anti-human.
That's it.
And they've got a certain window of opportunity, and ultimately, Daniel, again, I think they're going to fail, and fail big time, because when you're in a hurry, you make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, they may think that they have snookered the world with this COVID thing, but I don't see it. That narrative has fallen apart really fast.
Yes.
And the other problem they have is they want to centralize things, when I think the trend made possible by all this technology is in exactly the opposite direction. So in a certain sense, they're bucking a trend.
Fascinating. That Nazi influence, as you've pointed out, through the Nazi International in finance,
mm-hmm.
in the pharmaceutical companies, you mentioned IG Farben,
oh, yes.
Bayer taking over Monsanto,
yeah.
In armaments,
mm-hmm.
in false flag activity,
mm-hmm.
incredible influence of mm-hmm. this group, building itself into world centers of power, including the United States, almost invisibly.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's remember something else that circles back to the whole UFO operation thing. And that's something I mentioned in Saucer, Swastikas, and Psyops with Otto Skorzeny. Because Skorzeny, you know, Hitler's favorite commando, he was the commando that rescued Mussolini, put down the Hungarian rebellion, and on we could go, who made it out of Nazi Germany after the war and established his headquarters in Madrid, in the same building that the CIA worked out of. But Skorzeny...
Kind of a coincidence, right?
Kind of a coincidence there, yeah. Skorzeny wrote at some point during the war that he had seen something truly incredible. And what I think he saw was either the Bell or some project associated with it. And he said that this technology, whatever it was that he saw, gives the perfect opportunity for a Sonderkampf, for a special warfare. For a psychological operation involving that technology, and in his words, operating behind enemy lines. And if you look at the whole German approach to psychological warfare, their word for it at that time was Weltanschauungskrieg, worldview warfare. Not just psychological, but worldview. In other words, something designed specifically to change the basic cosmology of everyday man or everyday woman, just to change it. So again, I think he's alluding to the use of advanced technology in a psychological warfare type of operation. And again, you know, we're back to UFOs with Lou Elizondo and so on and so forth. That's the same type of thinking. And to me, it's interesting that the first person on the record that I'm aware of that thinks in that fashion is Otto Skorzeny, a Nazi.
Right. Yes, absolutely. Well, I mean, you've pointed out that when it comes to our space program, those guys were deep, deep, deep into the moon landing mm-hmm. Piece, and that actually the specialty for the scientists who were working was not rocketry.
Right.
Their specialties involved this kind of physics around the Bell.
plasma physics. Yeah, you're thinking of Kurt Davis.
Yes.
Kurt Davis, Dr. Kurt Davis. Well, you know, this guy is the Nazi's Nazi because, as I point out in the books, Davis was part of the Von Braun paperclip team that was brought and billoeted, basically bivouacked in El Paso, Texas, although they're doing their work in New Mexico. Well, after Roswell, a short time after Roswell, Army G2, counterintelligence, had learned that Davis had denounced a co-worker of his in 1942 to the Gestapo and reopened his file and again cleared him, okay? And it is true, Davis actually did denounce a fellow by the name of Richard Kramer in 1942 to the Gestapo. And at the time, Davis and Kramer were working for the Allgemeine Elektrizitätsgesellschaft, the German version of General Electric. And they were working for, as far as I can tell, on some project involving plasma physics, think the Bell. Uh-huh. And Davis retained that physics interest. He was not a rocket scientist. His specialty was high voltage discharge and measurement. Uh-huh. So why do you have Kurt Davis ending up in charge at Cape Canaveral of the Apollo flights? He's the head cheese for the whole Project Apollo there at Cape Canaveral. And after Apollo, guess what, Daniel? Before his retirement at NASA in 1986, he's put in charge of NASA's UFO files.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he's using this alternative exotic technology. I mean, he is at least, we know, somebody who's incredibly familiar with it. That's his specialty. Right. And he's deeply involved with the moon landing, suggesting that's the technology that they're using.
That's precisely what I think. And to me, Daniel, the key there has always been the LEM, you know, those films, television shots that we saw of the LEM taking off from the moon.
Right.
You look at, I think it was Apollo 17 that was the one that caught my eye, because I remember watching it as a kid. I'm sitting there on the living room floor watching the television. My dad's behind me smoking his pipe, reading the paper, and kind of paying attention to the shot. And up it goes. It just flies up, you know. And I remember thinking at the time, that's not a rocket.
Mm-hmm.
Rockets don't do that. Rockets accelerate geometrically per unit of time.
Uh-huh.
And I turned around, looked at my dad, and I said, that's not a rocket. Rockets don't do that. And he kind of grunts and, didn't. And at the time I thought, well, okay, either that's a really bad fake. Because, you know, if you're a moon hoaxer and this is all being done by what's his name in a
back screen?
Kubrick, Stanley Kubrick. Thank you. In a studio to fake the moon landing, Kubrick's not going to be stupid enough to come up with that kind of fake shot. So, I've always thought that there was some alternative technology that got us there and more importantly, got us off the moon.
Right.
And then Von Braun, back to Von Braun. After the first moon landing, I remember this, Daniel, because my parents subscribed to Time magazine, and there was one of those little box things like they put at the bottom of a page of a main article, and the box thing was a little interview that they had done with Von Braun. Now, this is before he resigns from NASA, okay? Mm-hmm. This is 1973.
So pre-Fairchild.
It's pre-Fairchild, right. And Von Braun says, oh, yes, and when they reached the neutral point, or the equigravisphere, he called it, but that's basically the neutral point of gravity between the Earth and the Moon. He says, when they reached the equigravisphere at 23,500 miles from the Moon's surface, that's when the Moon's gravity took over, and, you know. And it's that number that is so vivid, because if the moon's gravity was 1/6 that of the Earth, the equigravisphere would be more like 43,000 miles from the surface of the moon, not 23. So he just let out, if he was conveying accurate information, he just let out a little clue that the moon is more massive than we've been told.
Interesting.
And bang, within about 3 weeks after that little thing had appeared in Time, he's resigned from NASA and has gone to work for Fairchild.
Wow. They have to move him out immediately.
I think he let slip something that he shouldn't have let slip.
Well, this is fascinating because, you know, people have done those books, and we know you and I both believe that we went to the moon, of course.
Right.
But there's a lot of people in that circle who say, oh, we never went. It was all faked. Mm-hmm. We both think, that there, you just mentioned it actually, which is that there's some other factor involved in going to the moon. Mm-hmm. And I also think they could have been hiding whatever they saw when they got up there.
Oh, me too. Yeah.
And this is like a Richard Hoagland stream of thought here, mm-hmm. dark mission. Kind of, they found ancient artifacts, and that's part of the kind of kibosh and the snow mm-hmm. job around the moon landing. Mm-hmm. But when we think about this, there were pretty valid people who looked into it, and they said that people who were disturbed about congressional pieces being moved into the moon landing funding and the cover-up around the funding, when those people went to testify and bring that information out, they died mysteriously, as we've seen uh-huh. people die in things like the Kennedy assassination committees and things like uh-huh. that. So there's certainly some piece, puzzle uh-huh. there that was completely hidden, which had that same deep state overlay of eliminate the witnesses.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree.
The guy who wrote the book, it's We Never Went to the Moon. But he was a 70s author, and he really detailed this quite well. It was Bill Kaysing who brought forward these facts in his book. Maybe he was wrong on the hoax part, but he was mm-hmm. right that they were hiding something around the congressional aspects. And, of course, the tapes of the actual what we used to get to the moon landing all disappeared.
Yeah. Yeah. Not only that, but I'm in agreement with Richard Hoagland here that the astronauts who took part in those missions seem to have very curious memory lapses. Yeah. And he thinks there was a bit of mind manipulation to scrub or plant different memories involved. And I would not put that past them, because all of those astronauts are what? They're immediately rushed into quarantine in this little Airfix trailer, and they wave from the windows and off right. they go to wherever.
Yeah, right.
You know, anything could have been done. And yes. We're back to the UFO issue and abductions, because again, you can look at the parallels between the mind manipulation techniques that the CIA was experimenting with, and then look at these abduction phenomena and see some dangerous parallels going on. So yeah,
no question. Well, the CIA, which operates completely outside the law, right, yeah. outside the Constitution, et cetera. We know that. We expect it. The torture, investigations showed us that, if we didn't know it already. For those people to have possession of the UFO file and for them to be now the champions of UFO disclosure is really disturbing.
Yeah, I'm considering
the track record.
Yeah, given the track record, this government has lied about the Kennedy assassination. It has lied about Watergate. It has lied about Ruby Ridge. It has lied about Waco. It has lied, and now all of a sudden, we're going to believe it with UFOs. Count me out.
Yeah. But it says that they're ready to utilize the UFO op, and the question is, are they going to utilize it for the invasion op? This is important because we have these warnings there on the record. Von Braun's warning stands out there, and what he says is they're going to use an alien invasion op in order to weaponize space, but It's all untrue.
It's all untrue. Yeah. He actually, according to Rosen, he actually laughed.
Wow.
When he got to the ET part and said that when he said it's all untrue.
Wow.
Yeah.
I have a warning that I don't know if you're aware of it, but it comes from somebody who you are very aware of, which is Fletcher Prouty.
Mm-hmm.
Who, of course, worked as a liaison between the Pentagon and CIA. He was talking about this whole thing about the CIA and how they got control of various things. And he dropped something very interesting in the second edition of the Secret Team book from 1997, the original book being from the early 70s, where he exposed the CIA's role in the assassination of President Kennedy. I'll read it real quick. Alexandria, Virginia, 1997. L. Fletcher Prouty. This is fundamental. This is the fundamental game of the secret team. Well, the secret team, basically the CIA deep state. They have this power because they control secrecy and secret intelligence, because they have the ability to take advantage of the most modern communication system in the world, of global transportation system, of quantities of weapons of all kinds, when needed, the full support of a worldwide U.S. military supporting base structure.
Mm-hmm.
They can use the finest intelligence system in the world, and most importantly, they've been able to operate under the canopy of an assumed ever-present enemy called communism.
Uh-huh.
It will be interesting to see what enemy, in quotes, develops in the years ahead. It appears that UFOs and aliens are being primed to fulfill that role for the future.
Wow.
To top all of this, there is the fact that the CIA itself has assumed the right to generate and direct secret operations.
Uh-huh.
Fletcher Prouty.
Wow. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, well, he was dead on. I mean, to say that even back then, yeah. He's dead on. And let's not forget that Kennedy issued that order to the CIA to vet the UFO files.
Yeah.
And if you're the CIA and you're planning to create that kind of narrative, that's putting the CIA right in the crosshairs. So yeah. It's, you know, it's either him or the CIA. So, you know, there's so many motivations that so many people had to get rid of him. You know, Kennedy was a bit like Trump, only a lot smarter.
Yeah.
In that he was not beholden to the power structure. He was wealthy and powerful on his own, and he had enough sense to bring his brother and put him in charge of the Department of Justice.
Right.
You know. And if Trump made any mistake, it was not getting that rat's nest cleaned out.
Yes.
I mean, Bill Barr, come on.
Barr, Sessions, these are some of the worst choices. Yeah. And they basically hampered Trump's entire presidency, if you look at it, because he hampered from day one.
Yeah.
The Kennedy piece becomes particularly important when the CIA is trying to bring out this false UFO disclosure, though, because in fact, you know, the point being that their involvement in the Kennedy assassination, when we look at it and then we look at his instructions to them around the UFO file, we have one thing on record, which is Douglas Caddy, the Watergate lawyer, and he says on this program, E. Howard Hunt, who was his close friend, that's documented. We can ask his son, St. John Hunt, which I did, and he told me, Doug was there as part of the family. And he said John Kennedy was assassinated over the UFO file because he was going to share it with the Russians. The memo that you pointed to basically says the same thing. So, in fact, a weird thing happened, actually, that's very interesting, which is James Woolsey came out, former CIA director under Clinton, who often pops up around this UFO file, and who Catherine Austin Fitz said was part of that think tank studying the ET impact, the information, how would it hit Americans if they knew that E.T. lived among us? Mm-hmm. Woolsey also got into weird dust-ups with Stephen Greer after he got some information from him, and then Greer made a big thing out of it. And so he's been around this milieu. So he puts out a book called Operation Dragon a couple months ago, which with a Romanian intelligence guy who dies before the release of the book.
Oh, jeez.
And
Ceausescu lives.
He puts out the book, and it's all about how the Russians actually programmed Lee Harvey Oswald to go and assassinate President Kennedy. I mean, this is ridiculous. Uh-huh. And he goes on this program to talk about it. He speaks with John Greenwald, and he starts talking about UFOs. And he says, you know, my friend's plane was stopped by a UFO. He stopped it at 40,000 feet. We need to get transparency on that UFO file. So the CIA directors, by the way, James Clapper, who was Lou Elizondo's old boss, comes out and says that too. What are we looking at here? It's still around the Kennedy thing. There's a weirdness. It's like the CIA can't move forward without closing that and closing right. involvement out of it.
Well, that's an interesting observation.
Yeah.
I think there might be something to your idea there, because let's look at another strange document that fingers the UFO and hidden system of finance all at once in the Kennedy assassination, and that's the Torbett document.
Yes.
For those who don't know, this is a document that was purportedly drawn up by a Southern Texas lawyer going over the Garrison files.
Right.
And he alleges that this was a network of financiers and Nazis, von Braun being a part of it, operating under an organization called DISC, Defense Intelligence Security Command, or something like that.
It's quite an DISC. Acronym.
Yeah, yes. Quite an acronym for it, that was ultimately behind the assassination. Well, it makes sense to me because, again, what do you find Oswald doing? Well, as he's there in New Orleans handing out his Fair Play for Cuba leaflets, he's also trying to get a job with NASA.
Right.
And bragging about it openly to people. And this, he's doing this through the Riley Coffee Company in New Orleans, which apparently, if you dig into that entity, there are a lot of people that go to work for the Riley Coffee Company and then end up at NASA.
Yeah, you're right.
what does coffee have to do with NASA? So in other words, I think it's a front. It's a corporate front,
absolutely.
A recruiting front. So yeah, the Kennedy thing is something I don't think the CIA can move beyond. And this is another reason why I don't think you're ever going to get any sort of full disclosure from the government on the Kennedy assassination.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, Trump does it. And when those files are released, we find all of these FBI files about Hitler. What? Why is this in the mix? And again, you know, you look at all the connections around the Kennedy assassination. Certainly, I think UFOs have something to do with it. You've got those German intelligence connections with the Texas oilmen. You've got George de Morenschild, another hugely suspicious character in this mix. I think you're onto something. They can't move beyond this. And I think it's because, again, they set up this hidden system of finance. And that's the big ugly duckling squatting in the middle of this mix. You know, we're now reading stories of missing trillions of dollars.
Right.
Mark Skidmore has just come out and documented 94 missing trillions between 2017 and 2019 in the Department of Defense alone.
Wow.
Now that'll buy you
dramatically.
It jumped dramatically. That'll buy you a lot of exotic technology.
Mm.
And it'll buy you a lot of covert ops.
It's an incredible amount of money.
Yeah, it's totally.
And Skidmore has worked with Fitz, but for him to dig in on this and come up with those kinds of numbers, it's off the charts.
Well, he started to dig in on it because when he heard Fitz come out with the 21 trillion, he thought, oh, that's got to be wrong. So he set himself and his teaching assistants at Michigan State to dig into it. And come to find out she was right. Wow. So he's kept digging, you know, and here we are.
Wow. Well, these types of numbers really explain it.
Yeah, they do.
It also explains the UAP task force.
Yep. I have TSA and everything else. Where is that money coming from?
Yes.
You know, they start out with what? A capitalization of half a billion dollars or some astronomical amount of money.
Right.
Who raises that kind of money from venture capitalists for a UFO thing?
Right.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Come on. I mean, it's amazing. And their latest showing from the SEC, they may even dissolve, but they're $50 million in debt. How do you do that in the UFO field, right? I think MUFON is like $3 million for the whole year. I mean, come on.
Uh-huh.
This is really interesting because you're getting into the real place of where this is all happening. Because when we go into it, in fact, if you were to have UFO disclosure, you'd have to disclose the fact that one of the presidents was eliminated as a result of it.
Right.
That's real disclosure. Do you really want to disclose that?
No.
And what happens?
Well, let's just take the UFO disclosure with relationship to President Kennedy.
Yeah.
Not only would you have to disclose that, then you'd have to disclose a lot of other little things that are there in the record. You know, why were the Germans in NASA under James Webb, who was Kennedy's NASA director, kept on by Lyndon Johnson? Why were they trying to build the Saturn V booster in-house by themselves, not go through the American contracting process and all of that? Because they were fed up at the slowness of it. And on we could go. In other words, you pull that UFO disclosure thread and the relationship to President Kennedy, and you're going to unravel a whole heck of a lot, including, I suspect strongly, hidden system of finance. Why? Because, as we've suggested earlier, you've got some sort of exotic technology involved in Apollo. You've right. got a Nazi running it. So what kind of dirty deal was made to get us on the moon with those people? And I do think that there was a dirty deal made. Yeah, we'll let you have this. You let us see whatever it is you find up there. And so on and so forth.
Right. Well, let's outline it. The American power structure would work then with a Nazi international group having access to this advanced technology. They basically sell us that access.
Right.
Which many people have suggested they sold us uranium. And the atomic your research.
I'm one of them.
You were the one I was thinking of, yes. And they already had that. That was already you've pointed out things like the dramatic losses that the Soviets suffered against the Nazis.
People have no idea the scale of the slaughter on the Eastern Front. And it's such that, to my mind, you cannot explain it by ordinary military operations. It's just, it can't be done. You know, and Skorzeny himself, in his memoirs, pointed out that during the Battle of Moscow in 1941, the Germans were doing something using fuel air bombs with their rocket artillery. It was so off the charts that the Soviets communicated to the Nazis through Stockholm that, you know, if you keep doing this, we're going to start using poison gas.
Wow.
And what the Germans were apparently doing was they were taking their rocket artillery batteries and firing a few, you know, these were six-barreled rocket launchers, firing five rounds of nothing but gas, like methane or propane, saturating an area with gas and then firing one shell to detonate the thing.
Wow.
And if you've ever seen, Daniel, if you've ever seen those rocket batteries going off on a target, I mean, it's, you know, time on target, simultaneous, you know, landing of the projectiles on a target, and it's just, you know, it's just flattened. So add, you know, add a fuel error type of situation to the mix, and it's just, yeah.
You set the atmosphere on fire.
You set the atmosphere on fire. You know, you create an explosion the equivalent of a tactical nuke. So they were doing something on the Eastern Front that, you know, they never did on the Western Front with the Western Allies. They may have even used nukes. You know, how do you explain 35 million Soviet casualties to the Germans, too?
Wow. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
The disclosure thing goes to that kind of secrecy.
Yes.
These types of secrets. If you got to a point of real disclosure, you'd have to admit, well, President Kennedy wanted to share this information with the Russians, and as a result, requested all these files. There was a tug of war there for years, for 3 years with Kennedy and the CIA. And at a certain point, a force comes in, because you've said there was a piece that was nested in there on the space side related to the Nazis. And the CIA, that battle, unraveling that piece would unravel this piece. So therefore, they had to kind of keep it in place by eliminating Kennedy. That's where the CIA's role comes from.
Let's look at another possibility here in this connection.
Yes.
You remember the old British 1970s April Fool's farce called Alternative 3?
Yes.
Okay. In that farce, they interview a character who says that there always seemed to us, meaning whatever Royal Institute of such and such and whatever, there always seemed to be some element of deep coordination between the United States and the Soviet Union in their space race. And that is a wow moment. Because, and I talk about this in SS Brotherhood of the Bell, if you look at the American and Soviet space race and all those probes that both of us were sending to the moon in the early 1960s, you'd have the Soviets launch a few and then they'd stop. And then you'd have the Americans launch a few and then we'd stop. And then the Soviets would launch a few and they'd stop. So you can look at that schedule of probes one of two ways. It's a real race, or there's coordination.
Mm.
And if there's coordination, then there has to be an infrastructure to do the coordinating that has feet on the ground in both countries. Can you say Reinhard Gehlen?
Mm.
Who runs Oswald?
Right.
Who incidentally speaks German. That's the other thing that they don't usually remind people, but he spoke German.
Yeah, that's
Who runs Oswald inside the Soviet Union and then manages to get him back out with a Soviet GRU colonel's daughter in tow as his wife?
In that era. Amazing. The idea of getting somebody into the Soviet Union at that point was almost impossible. And then getting him out.
with money. Yeah. That's
suggesting it's Galen's operation.
I'm suggesting it's Galen because he's got the boots on the ground inside the Soviet Union. Right. At that point of time, let's remember what the Soviet desk in the CIA was, according to, you know, several American historians. It was nothing but, quote, a front for a Nazi spy operation, unquote.
Wow.
Yeah. So if there's coordination, then I suspect that somewhere in the mix you have the German BND involved.
Mm-hmm.
If there's coordination. But, you know, like I say, you can certainly look at that schedule of the so-called space race and see something going on. And then the Soviets, this is the little known part of the story. Right around the time that Apollo 10 and 11 are ready to go, the Soviets also have their big moon boosters that they're testing. Massive, gigantic, huge rockets. and they all blow up on the launch pad. And the Soviets suspect sabotage. Well, who has the ability to carry that out?
Unbelievable. The same network.
The same network.
Do you, this is absolutely amazing. That is the We Never Went to the Moon book that I was referencing.
Okay, yeah, I will look into that.
I'm shocked that there's so much congressional stuff that he points out in terms of the budget items and all the rest that are inconsistent. And then when he gets into it, the guy who was exposing a lot of this stuff, he shows up at a train track. They keep his car there. The train rams the car, which it's one of those.
Uh-huh.
Early in the morning.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So I was like, well, you remember that scene? You pointed it out to me in Diamonds Are Forever. There's a, you know, Bond is running away and he runs onto the set where it's like a moon landing set.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Howard Hughes is the
Howard Hughes. Yeah, Jimmy Dean. Yeah. And a special cameo appearance by Klaus Schwab. I mean, Ernst Stavro Blofeld.
That's true.
I know, it's unreal. Oh. It's just, and Schwab has those interesting connections to the Degussa company in Germany, which was heavily involved in their A-bomb research and their post-war A-bomb stuff with South Africa. So, oh. You know, give me a break, Klaus. You're not fooling anybody. Do a deep dive on him, and it's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing.
You know what I keep running into and that you introduced me to? I'd never even heard of it. It was Ottrog.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And I've been running into weird things about it.
Oh, yeah. Very weird. Very weird. Their own little special 250,000 square mile preserve in the Congo.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
Joseph, uh-huh. What book did you have that in? Do you remember?
It was either the Nazi International or it may have been one of the later ones, but I think it was Nazi International.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that von Braun worked for them, just amazing. And all I can think is, this is early SpaceX.
Wow. You know who was on the board after his retirement from NASA? Kurt Davis.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So he's the same one who's handling the UFO file.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Uh-huh. We got to go into this now. That's crazy.
And you know who broke the Ottrog story?
Who?
Mikhail Gorbachev.
Wow.
He's the one that accused Germany of having the preserve and doing all of this stuff. Yeah, it was Mikhail Gorbachev.
That is wild. Mm-hmm. All right, we got to get into this.
We're definitely going to do another part for this interview. So let's round this episode out this way.
We talk about Guy Bannister,
mm-hmm.
who Oswald worked for.
Mm-hmm.
This would be real UFO disclosure, right? Not, uh-huh. Oh, there are these beach balls that are attacking the U.S. Omaha, you know, during war games. Yeah. So you get Guy Bannister, former FBI director in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
He went to New Orleans, starts this organization, does all this work for the black side of the government, black mm-hmm. projects. He's infiltrating these groups. He uses Oswald. He's a severe right winger. His history goes back. It's been trailed by a number of different authors. But his history goes back to the FBI where he starts the X-Files.
Yes.
And he uses the X designation. He's the one who goes down. And you can find him in actual newspaper reports looking at saucer, witnessing, interviewing witnesses, and so on. He's basically like Fox Mulder. Then you get 15 years later. Oh, another interesting thing is the person he's acquainted with while in the FBI is Jim Garrison, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if Oswald's working for him, that's part of disclosure too, because mm-hmm. he's associated with starting the UFO file.
Yep. And he starts it with who? Kenneth Arnold.
Yes. That's where we get the whole term,
yeah.
UFO, et cetera. That's real UFO disclosure.
That's really UFO disclosure. And are they gonna mention any of that in this big release coming up in June? I doubt it.
Yeah.
And it's all public record. That's the damnable thing about it. You can find all this out about Guy Bannister. You can read my books. You can read Nick Redfern's books.
Right.
You know, a number of people have written about Bannister and the UFO. So what's he doing in the middle of the Garrison investigation of the assassination of President Kennedy? Yet another UFO connection.
It is. It's undeniable if you really want to get down to it. So the idea of like, you know, hey, a Navy pilot saw some UFOs, you know, I mean, that's been going on since the 1940s. Plenty of reports like that. So, no, but you know what? It's a whole new cultural shift, and we're going to learn about climate change through this too.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that nice?
And it's a threat.
And it's a threat. Yeah. Well, you know, I'd be very grateful if our ET brothers are so concerned about climate change. Could they please let Mr. Globalone and Mr. Central Bankster know that there's other energy forms and you don't need to put the whole planet on lockdown to release them, you know?
Wow, Joseph, incredible information and insight. This is the real deep dive and so refreshing after all the UFO threat peddling that's been going on through the media. And of course, the deep state secrecy is the real threat. So we're going to do another major segment here with you for our members and get that directly in your inbox in just a day or two. You can become a member at darkjournalist.com, and now is the perfect time. Of course, all of Joseph's work is available at GizaDeathStar.com. Thank you for joining us. See you soon.